there is no worse smell. And Tim Mayer, will you agree with me? Is there any worse smell than turning your heat on for the first time in the season?
It's probably not a good experience.
No, it's not.
Correct.
I don't know how you fix that issue. I don't know if you can test drive it at some point. Maybe you turn it on, go to work when you come home. Hopefully it's off. But 38 on Friday night, 62 and 46 on Saturday. More sunshine pushing 70 Sunday and Monday. So not bad, not bad at all. City Councilman Tim Mayer joins us, as he does every Tuesday morning just after 8:05. And we haven't had any rain all month, Tim, so a little rain's not going to hurt us. We're not going to melt, are we?
No, we need the rain. Things are dried up pretty bad. So
after almost three weeks of nothing at all.
Yeah.
And the good news, as we can tell by the trees, if you look outside, it's the 18th day of October. There's a lot of green because we've had so much rain throughout the year. We've been over every month. That hasn't been the case in October. But when we have 83 degree days and 70 at homecoming Saturday, I looked down at my phone at 6:55 at night and said it was 75 degrees on October 15th. I'm never going to argue with that too much.
No, I think we're going to pay for it, though, don't you?
Always.
Oh, please don't say that.
Always, always, always.
No, I was driving home last night from Ivy Tech, and it was 77 degrees.
I'm always inside in January. I can't. In October, I'm still wanting to be outside a little bit. So I'll take the brutal.
Nice. Well, you could go sit on your patio.
I'll take the brutal January. That's fine. But having a nice October, there's nothing wrong with that. When we last spoke to you, you had a busy week last week. Was that when all the dates were screwed up and everything was backwards?
Had to have a meeting on Thursday.
Yeah.
Well, yes, that's right. And that was the meeting that we concluded our work on the city budget. And believe it or not, we were finished by 8:20.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that a new track record?
I think it may be.
Did you have Tom Carnegie standing in the background?
One.
It's a new track record.
One has to remember that we start the process in August.
Right.
And, have numerous meetings. Four meetings to get the initial budget underway, and then we take a little break and come back. During that break, council members work with the administration to get things the way they want them. And so last week's meeting was really the culmination of a lot of work, and it's pretty straightforward at that point. So
a mere formality.
Yes. So we now have a 2017 budget in the works, and it will go up to the state for its approval, and then hopefully we get it, and we'll be on our way.
And Tim, for those not tuned into the process, when the state approves it, that shouldn't take very long either, correct?
That is correct. That is correct.
Because by this point, all the T's should be crossed, all the I's should be dotted, everything should be within the yellow lines, and it's just a formality to make sure that no one's sneaking anything in under the wire or adding something outside procedurally.
All of those things, all the above. Yeah.
All the above.
So I think we're in good shape for 2017. I think Mayor Hamilton and his staff did a good job getting a budget before us. It was pretty seamless and. A lot of good discussions. I think we're in good shape for 2017. So, have to applaud everybody for the work they put into it.
Tim, in local government, as opposed to what we see sometimes in the federal government, where if they don't pass this by a certain date, government has to close down. Is the official date of the effectiveness of the budget that you now have sent to the state actually January 1st, or is there some overlap of some kinds?
No, there's really no overlap, and if we did not do our work in a timely manner and get it done in time, we would have to live with our 2016 budget.
Okay.
So that's why, and it's very rare for any municipality in the state of Indiana to have that happen. I mean, everybody kind of knows the rules; they play by them and get their budgets done on time and get them authorized. So.
Now, tomorrow you've got a regular council meeting and five pieces of legislation before you?
That is correct. 2 weeks ago, we discussed the Dunhill apartment complex, so that will be on the agenda. That will come later in our agenda. We'll start off with a resolution to waive payments in lieu of taxes for the Bloomington Housing Authority. That's an annual event. Basically, what happens is the Housing Authority up at Crestmont, we do not provide sanitation service. They use a private sanitation service for their complex up there.
You're talking about trash pickup?
Yes.
Okay.
So we waive that portion of the tax that would reflect how much it would cost for us to pick up the trash. So, and that's been something that's been in effect for many, many years. Like I say, it's an annual event.
Is that the only place in the city where there's that kind of a waiver?
Yes, to my knowledge, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Then we will be, Councilmember Sturbrum is bringing forward an ordinance that will allow certain boards and commissions to add advisory members. So there are voting members, and then Councilmember Sturbrum sees value in having expertise or people who are interested in certain board and commission's activities. So that board or commission may choose to accept advisory members, and those members are, again, are non-voting, but they can participate in the meetings and actually kind of serve as, using the baseball analogy, a farm team. So that when a board or commission member in standing steps aside or steps down, the advisory member would be a logical choice to move forward. So.
Right.
Yeah, so that's in the works. And some of the boards and commissions are controlled by state statute. Land Commission, for example, Board of Zoning Appeals. So those would not be affected because the constituencies of those boards and commissions are established by statute. So we can't change that. So that'll be. And then we come back to the meeting we had 2 weeks ago where we will look at the historic designation of a voluntary property up on Moore's Pike, which went smoothly last week, or 2 weeks ago. That's the third piece of legislation, and then we'll get down to the Dunhill Apartments, which is to basically authorize the planned unit development that they are requesting, and to vacate a street that is not there. There's a platted street, Grant Street, which is part of the complex, so that'll probably be the most time that we will spend in the evening talking about that issue. We did have, a pretty good discussion 2 weeks ago. Neighbors did come out and have a lot of concerns about it, and I think there's been some work to address some of those issues, so we shall see.
Tim, we're talking with Tim Mayer, a member of the Bloomington City Council. And Tim, as I recall, part of what the Dunhill proposal was to literally tear down what's there and start by building new aspects to that?
That is correct.
And
it's basically to clean the site.
Is that the controversy, is the I don't, what do you call it, the density?
The density is the issue for the neighbors, because basically the density will just about double from what it currently is. So, it's hard to criticize that. You know, when you see a larger number of people, when you see that change coming, you know, and it's in your neighborhood, it's difficult. It's difficult for those people to accept that.
And was part of that there was going to be a parking garage there, too?
There will be a parking garage that will park about, just going off the top of my head here, about two-thirds of the number of units will have access to that. You know, about two-thirds of the beds will have access to that parking. So the
math would say one-third doesn't, right, and we'll have to find other places to park.
But by increasing the density, you move those people off the street, you now put them in a parking garage.
Right.
Okay.
And there are surface lots at the current Dunhill site, I think the research that the developer is using and what our planning staff typically sees is that they have come pretty close to the number of cars that they expect to be on the site as opposed to the number of beds. So, I mean, not everybody has a car, but
it's close.
A lot of people do have cars. So
that's exactly right. And the neighbors want as many in the garage as possible, so the streets are freed up, so there's room for them to park. Because you talk about being around the Assembly Hall complex, the football complex, that gets busy about 30 times a year.
Yeah, we know that, especially during basketball season and football season, those neighborhoods feel the impact of that. We hear it from Matlock Heights. We hear it from Garden Acres. And so, it's just part of, you know, part of being close to a very large venue is what it turns out. So, no, the neighbors are basically opposed to the project in total. They just have a difficult time accepting that, there'll be that many people living there. And I share their concern to some extent, but I also know that, you know, it's close to campus, and so...
Well, the question would be, and this is not a jab or a poke at the current residents that live there. I'm asking Tim Mayer, Bloomingtonian for over 30 years with his infinite knowledge and experience, where are we going to put all these people moving forward? The university owns land. They're not going to give any of that away, we know. They're trying to acquire all the land anywhere around campus that they can get their hands on. If you want to build people somewhere, out towards Ellettsville, that's not where people want to live. So what is your vision in the next, 10 years of where these megaplexes are going to be?
Well, I think that this particular proposal before us does make sense in that it is as close to campus as you will be able to get, because everything to the east and to the south is pretty much under the control of the university. The other part of it is that Indiana University is not coming forward with more housing. They are not in the business of building dormitories, is what we are led to believe. So basically what is occurring is that as the university grows in its population, the city has to absorb that population. And so, you know, we have seen pretty dramatic increases in our downtown. We've seen it on the south and east of our community. And so I suspect we'll continue to see that as long as the university continues to grow.
Tim, let me ask you a kind of a philosophical question on that. When I worked in Chicago, one of the things that we saw a lot was people in and around O'Hare Airport complaining about the noise and things like that. And one of the issues was O'Hare Airport was there before you ever moved there. So you knew there was an airport there. You knew what comes with an airport. Is there something similar here with people moving into areas where there are student complexes and then, you know, expecting it not to develop further as student complex?
Well, in defense of the neighbors who are concerned, I know many of them, and they have been long-term residents of their neighborhood. So it's not like somebody moved in one day and said, you know, guess what? So, I mean, I'll tell you, when I moved into the house that we lived in on Bryan Avenue, we moved in 1971. The first day I walked out with our one-year-old in the stroller, and our neighbor came across the street to greet me and introduce herself and said hello. And then she said, "Do you know the university's going to make this a four-lane street?"
get you early. Get you started in the process.
Surprise.
Indoctrinate you early.
Well, it never came to be, but it was quite a eye opener. So, you know, and that was one block off of the IU campus.
Right.
So, yeah. So I think, you know, I've always contended in my mind that if, you know, you live within sight of a hospital or a university or an academic institution, you know, you better be prepared for changes in and around that environment, just because by their very nature, they tend to grow. And we saw that with Bloomington Hospital.
Right.
And now we'll be relocating that hospital. And so if you think about it, the site that the hospital is moving to will not have impacts on it.
I was just going to mention that, how strange that is, because that's completely the exception more than the rule.
Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty unusual, but...
Tim, before we let you go, I got a question. This is a Keith Klein question.
He's prefaced it with that. All right.
When I go over to the early voting area, I see all of these political signs. It's always been there. But this year we have an ordinance about putting signs in what is, I guess you refer to as the public right-of-way. And that's where these signs are. So, and that's in the city. So what's the deal there that is allowing that to happen?
Well, I haven't been down there, but somebody told me they could not put signs there. Have you seen the signs?
Yes.
Okay. I was told by one of the candidates that they weren't allowed to put signs there anymore.
Who's in charge of monitoring that or enforcing that, Tim?
City Planning Department, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was just a question. I did see that apparently some candidates have been told they're not going to be allowed to put their signs out at the polling places. That's kind of a county issue, but that's going to be a change, too.
I'm not aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, you keep your ears and eyes open there, buddy.
I will.
Yeah.
I will.
Are you early voting or voting on Election Day?
Probably early voting because
you work.
He's involved.
That's right.
Yeah.
Sue and I work the election counting mail-in ballots. So
you do the absentee stuff.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
And we've had a lot of that, a lot of early voting happening. So that's
a lot of early voting, but the ballots we count are the ballots that are mailed in. So
how many stamps do you have to put on that ballot, Tim? Is that a two banger or is that a?
You know, I don't know. I think it's just one. But
I'd hate to get a return to sender about the November 10th and say
insufficient
postage. Oh, geez.
That would not be good.
All right.
Don't put your SNH green stamp on there.
No,
right?
Please don't. Say
we didn't get the sleeping bag rating for tomorrow night, Tim.
I think it's going to be probably a fairly long meeting.
Yeah.
So.
Ooh, with the final push for the Dunhill apartments, I don't want to say that's Custer's last stand, but we're we're in that kind of neighborhood. I do empathize and I do sympathize, and I wish there was a solution that fits all. But I don't think we live in a world anymore, and this political race tells us that everybody has their own idea of what they mm-hmm. think is heaven or utopia, and it's hard to convince other people of otherwise of what's best for all when it's a me and.
And not in my backyard.
Well, and not in my backyard. It's a tough one, and I don't envy your position on that. Great job as always. We appreciate
your
time. We'll hear the recap next Tuesday morning, just after 8:05. Meeting tomorrow night, 7:30. Council chambers.
7:30. It's a regular session, so people can come to the meeting and speak on issues not on the agenda before the meeting gets going. And then, of course, they're always invited to talk on the issues at hand. So,
do you have one of those things like they have at the deli, now serving 39, and you call you call the number out, now serving 47, and then you walk up to the front. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Tim, good job as always. We appreciate the insight and your opinion, and we will see you next week.
Talk to you next week.
Tim Mayer, city councilman, checks in every Tuesday morning. Good stuff from Tim. I liked his thoughts on that. It's not easy. And people think that you should just run in there and kick the door open and have this idea, then everybody will say, oh, my gosh, that's great.
Well, and you're also hearing from a political standpoint of what are
you
considering.
How it works.
Yeah.
Exactly right. In the guts in it and the decisions and what has to go into it from all sides, not one side. Because
Tim plays it pretty well down the middle on these things. So, you know how he's thinking.
Experience will do that. And he's been around the game. He gave you a great analogy about how the town is evolving. It doesn't stop. People think it's one evolution or revolution. No, it's kind of like the sun around the earth. It keeps going. And if it stops, then you got problems.
That's right.
And then you've got a whole different set. So everybody wants to park their donkey on Kirkwood and be able to walk to the fair every year. I mean, that was great 50, 60, 80, 100 years ago. But we're not going back. So we have to embrace the change and move forward and put your best thoughts and plans into that to try to make what's best for the greater good. Not in the a la carte society of me, me, me.